What's going on, everybody? It is Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show and Aftershocks TV. And before we get to this next episode, I just wanted to remind you that I have a book out there called And Other Things I Should Not Say. It is about the absolute debauchery that raged in my world when I was stationed overseas in Korea, as well as a little bit of Arizona and some basic training and AIT stories as well. It's kind of my military book. It is wild, friends. I'm going to tell you now, it is definitely not biblical reading. So make sure you go over and get it. It's on Amazon.com or my website, Chris Aiken Books, and Other Things I Should Not Say. Get it now if you're bold enough to dare, all right? All right, here's the episode you actually came to see.
It's Got Hard right here on your Classic Metal Show from their self-titled debut release with Fire Dance featuring Steve Lee on lead vocal, who unfortunately was killed along the Interstate 15 outside of Las Vegas on a motorcycle trip.
Yep, sad.
Yeah, that guy was really nice. We had him on the show the one time, and you and I interviewed him together, and real friendly guy, very upbeat, and it was just like, holy shit, this guy got killed on the side of the road. I guess he was out riding motorcycles with friends or something, and they stopped alongside the freeway and some car ran into him and killed him.
Yep, done.
Yeah, it was kind of like the same thing that happened to Tim Kelly.
Yeah.
From Slaughter. Same deal.
Yep. Same exact thing.
What a fucked up deal that was.
Yep.
And Tim Kelly, another nice dude.
Yeah, Tim was nice.
Yeah, he was real friendly guy.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that whole thing with Steve Lee, it was definitely sad, but I'll tell you what, his band deserves a punch in the fucking gones for fucking this awful tribute they put out this year. Did you hear
that? I didn't hear it. No, not at all.
Oh, literally, they're one step away from answering machine messages.
Really?
Dude, they put out this thing. It's called Eye of the Tiger, a tribute to Steve Lee. You can look it up. It's out there.
Okay.
It's acoustic, and then they put band behind the same tracks of acoustic, it sounds like, anyway.
All right.
Of scraps of shit that was not meant to be put out, including the Survivor song, Eye of the Tiger.
All right. No, I was not aware of any of that.
Pull up Eye of the Tiger by Godhard.
Okay.
You'll find the acoustic version, I'm sure.
All right. I this is all news to me.
From a tribute to Steve Lee. Ooh. I heard it. Because normally, we like Godhard. So
yeah, they're just a good, kind of a blues based rock band.
Yeah.
Out of Sweden.
But this is out of the trash can, not Sweden.
All right. Eye of the Tiger acoustic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Check this jewel out.
Steve Lee, The Eyes of a Tiger.
Yeah.
Ugh. In memory of our unforgotten friend.
Yeah.
All right. I wasn't aware, but this will be a first time listen for me.
First time play.
Exactly. All right. Here we go.
Since now I'm back on my feet, just a man and his will to survive. So many times it happened too fast. You trade your passion for glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. And see, high over Tiger is the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of our rival.
All right. Well, it's not horrible, but I don't understand why you would do that.
It's clearly not a polished. It's not what he did.
Yeah, he just. This sounds like something that they may have demoed or something. Like they might have included it as like a bonus track or something on their forthcoming release before he got killed or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Something they were working on but didn't finish.
No, it was just. Obviously he was reading the words. You can hear he's very mechanical in his delivery.
Yeah. And his voice isn't very good. I mean, this is a smooth singer.
Well, it's a raw track. It's very raw.
So why release it? That's my point. Yeah, is it the worst ever? No. But this guy was one clean singer, and they just put out some horse shit that he had left over.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing that came to mind when I heard this, you know, as Natalie said, what comes to mind, Larry King style, would be if he went to a karaoke bar and decided to get up there and just belt out a tune.
Yeah. Yeah, after about 25 drinks.
Yeah, you know, it's not terrible.
No.
But, you know, at least it's produced. It doesn't sound like got a lot of ambient noise or anything, but
no.
Why would you put that out?
Yeah, I mean, his voice doesn't sound good. And that's my whole point is it's a tribute to him. What's the title? Eyes of the Tiger? A tribute to
Stevie? The Eyes of a Tiger in memory of our unforgotten friend.
And then you put out something that does not sound his best.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got this thing and was like, ooh, pass.
And you didn't put this out? You didn't send it on to me?
Deleted right off my hard drive.
Well, again, I get how some bands, and again, I don't even know what the thought process was, but capitalizing on, I don't know. I don't know if it's a sincere effort to go, hey man, we really miss our friend. And I know that, the Gotthard fans miss Steve Lee, and here's a little remnants of what he left behind. Or is it, well, somebody offered us some money and we did have these tracks laying around. So why not put them out?
Why do I think it's the second?
Not well,
the
again, I don't know. And again, I hate to be as callous as I am, but you and I both know the truth about the, the industry. And, you know, Gotthard, not a household name.
Yeah.
And these guys probably work a normal job, you know, when they're not playing as a band.
Right.
You know, it's just like, yeah, Frontiers offered us $25,000 if we threw out a disc full of unreleased Gotthard demos. So we all get $5,000 a piece or whatever. It's like, yeah, well, what the fuck, let's go ahead and produce those up real quick and send those over. And who knows, I don't know. I agree with you though. It's just like, yeah, why are you doing this?
How'd you like to be the guy that replaced him for the last 10 years? And then they're still leaning back to a guy that died 10 years ago.
Well, without Steve Lee, we would never been Gotthard, man.
Yeah, whatever. Probably true, but so what?
Well, you just never know what people do or why they do what they do.
Nah. I have a feeling this was dollars.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure some label offered him a few shekels and said, do you got anything laying around? Well, yeah, there was this last session we did before Steve, got killed, and, we have a few tracks laying around. Well, can you produce those up and send them over, and I'll throw you some bones?
Sure. We got nothing to do since we're not on tour because of COVID. Let's throw this shit together.
There you go.
Garbage.
Yeah, I agree.
Garbage.
All right, well, let's get to our TV watching, shall we?
All right, let's do that.
as I told you earlier in the show, I got a new Roku player.
Yes.
So I was busy watching a few things, and one of the things that popped up on my watch list there was a new docu-series. I think it's four parts of Richard Ramirez, The Night Stalker.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you and I and Bob Nalbandian were texting after Kendall's show on Wednesday, and I just finished watching the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob had seen it, and I know you hadn't seen it yet.
Right.
And I thought, again, as I'm such a big documentarian fan, mm-hmm. of all kinds of stuff, you know, whether it's mob stuff or music related or history or whatever the case may be, as you are and as Bob is.
Right.
This kind of hit home with me, the Night Stalker. This all took place during 1985.
Right.
And I moved to LA in July of 85 at the height of this Night Stalker hysteria.
Okay.
That was going on in the LA region.
Yeah.
And so it I kind of relived some of the headlines and the news reporting and the memories and the things that were taking place then. So this caught my attention right away, and I thought it was very well done documentary, because they interviewed the two detectives, the LA sure. detectives that were on the case.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about these documentaries so much is when they dig up all the old archive footage.
Right.
That's the greatest thing to me. It's just like, I just love it when they have footage and they have archive footage that they dig up.
Right.
And, you know, again, I don't know what your perspective was. I don't know what you were doing in 1985, because obviously I didn't know you then. So sure. I don't know what you knew about the Night Stalker or had heard about it, or because this was clearly a West Coast thing. I know yeah. it may have made the news on the East Coast a little bit, but, yeah. but this dominated the LA news cycle.
Yeah, I don't remember it being a big deal out here. Honestly, I was a junior in high school, and I honestly do not remember it being a big deal at all. I'll be honest, even leading into watching the documentary, I had to look up what year it was, because I thought it was from the 50s or 60s. I didn't even know. I had no idea.
All right.
So I don't think it was at least here for a high school kid, not a big deal. I certainly wasn't afraid to go out or anything like yeah, that.
You weren't. You probably were not actively watching the news either.
I did. My dad used to. That was kind of the thing. Have dinner, watch the news with the family, and then Splinter. You know, that was kind of I actually did watch the news quite okay. a bit.
Okay. Well, I'm just guessing. I know a lot of, you know, young people are not typically engaged.
Yeah. But being honest, I probably wasn't paying that much attention. I was probably doing homework or.
Yeah, of course. That's kind of my point.
Yeah. I was probably sitting in front of the TV, but just not paying very much attention to it.
Thinking of your next weed buy and your next, yeah, exactly. Next mm-hmm. piece of pussy that you could entice with some weed.
Now you're remembering it the way I do.
So anyway, I moved to LA in July of 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the height of this Night Stalker thing.
Right.
So for me to watch this was, I thought it was very well done. And the fact that they were able to get the two detectives that, obviously they're, this is what, 85, 95, 05, 15, 30, 35, 36 years ago.
Right.
To get these guys who obviously are retired now.
Sure.
To film this thing and give their recollection and their account
mm-hmm.
of all the things that took place. Now, did this Richard Ramirez, is he dead now? Did he die? Yeah, he died of what, like cancer or
lung cancer or something. And they said in the documentary in 2013.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that he terrorized LA.
Yeah.
And I remember that was the height of the news when I moved there. Okay. Because everyone was talking about this Night Stalker, this whole right. Night Stalker thing. And to have the people who were affected personally by this, whether they were kin to the victims, mm-hmm. as well as the detectives and the news, the news people who covered this. And, one of the stark things that really stuck out for me is that I understand that the media is an important part of this country, but today it's just a bastardized thing. I think the media in this country basically has made conditions in this country worse.
Right.
For everything, because of all the misreporting and the misrepresentation and the way that they frame everything, mm-hmm. rather than just report the facts.
Right.
Everything's got a slant. Mm-hmm. But they actually talked to the news reporters from LA that were covering the story, and how they fucking blew this case several times.
Yeah.
Because they were so greedy, and mm-hmm. that's the only word I can think of, greedy, yeah. to report what was going on rather than let the police do their job and keep certain details confidential. Mm-hmm. No, they had to blab it out there because look at us. We got the exclusive.
Yeah.
We got the exclusive. It's like, you know what? Fucking die in a fire, as Chris Aiken would say.
Well, they even said that stupid cunt Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah. The mayor of San Francisco at the time, who became a congressperson, who's still there at 100 years old.
Yeah. But she released information, and then he adapted to the information. They said that she released some information, and then he started like cutting phone cords and stuff because there was something about phone calls
and his shoes.
Yeah. And his shoes. So he changed up because the stupid bitch put it out there.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, you fucking whore.
And and of course she got elected to Congress and she's still fucking there. When she like 87 years old or something like that?
Somebody just posted in the chat room she's 86.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. What is this old woman still doing in Congress?
Yeah. What relationship does she have to whatever her constituents in San Francisco? None. It's insane.
Well, again, this just proves that regardless of how old or decrepit these people are, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or Dianne Feinstein, it's all about maintaining that power.
Mm-hmm.
As we saw in this previous election, it's all about the power, regardless of how you get it.
Yeah.
So, just ridiculous. But anyway, if any of you remember or even heard of the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez in L.A., mm-hmm. that documentary is just absolutely really well done. Yeah.
Dude, here's my question for you.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with these fucking whores that were sending him naked photos and fucking trying to get him to give him attention when in court? What the hell was that about?
It's bizarre. I mean, it really is bizarre. Look at Charles Manson of all people, mm-hmm. Or even Ted Bundy or any one of these people that, have been jailed and have been serial killers and have done horrific things. These people who, solicit them with marriage proposals.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell are you thinking? Now those are the mentally ill people in society.
Yeah. Those are the ones you wish somehow that if a Richard Ramirez is out there that he finds those. Cause they deserve the death that the innocent people are getting.
Absolutely.
you know, if you're going to be that fucking romanced by this guy because he has a sweet haircut or whatever, you know, I don't know about you. And obviously, I know what his history was. So maybe I'm making this judgment based on knowing that he killed and raped like a shit ton of people.
And a lot of elderly people.
Yeah.
And kids. He's like raping 80-year-old women or something. Yeah. You know, it's really fucking just bizarre.
But when you saw him, when you saw a video of him, when you saw pictures of him or whatnot, that motherfucker just looked evil.
Yeah. Well, again, the whole thing with the dark eyes, the dead eyes, and the rotten teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, me personally, my oral hygiene is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I take care of my mouth.
Right.
but throughout the whole 4-part documentary, all you heard about was his rotten teeth.
Yeah. They even said that they missed him at a dentist appointment, and they knew he was going to come back because he had an impacted tooth.
Yeah, he had a rotten tooth.
Yeah.
You know, and then he smelled.
Yeah.
And it was just like, holy shit, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing is this guy looked evil. He smelled evil.
Yeah.
He obviously did some really catastrophic things to people. And yet these mentally ill women are soliciting him for marriage proposals.
Yeah.
Kinds of fucked up shit. This goes to show you, as much as I love women in general,
yeah,
women are fucked up.
They are.
Yeah, they're just as bad as the serial killers.
They really are. It's unreal. Anybody that sent, they should literally grab anybody that, oh, here's a naked picture of her. They should just grab her and shoot her. It would save the world so much.
I agree.
I would love to hear from them now. Now that would make for some interesting documentarianism. If they would have said, here's Marsha. She sent naked photos to Richard Ramirez and then interview her and say, hey, Marsha, why in the fuck did you want this guy that killed 30 people to see your tits?
Yeah.
Why did you want that? Wouldn't you love to hear that?
Well, can we get Bob Nalbandian on the case?
Yeah.
I mean, he's good at going out place to place and locating these people and interviewing them. Not like Larry King come in there totally ignorant of the subject material.
Well, knowing Bob, he's probably dated most of them.
Well, let me ask you something. Bob Nalbandian interviewer, Larry King interviewer.
Oh, it's Larry King by a mile. I could just see the Inside Metal documentary by Larry King now. So your band Violence. No, it's Violence. Yeah, Violence. I got it. You guys were a band? What's that hyphen about? Did you run out of space typing the name? I'm trying to learn here.
Because I came in unprepared.
Yeah.
I don't want to even know anything about your band until I hear it from the horse's mouth.
That's right.
Speaking of horse's mouth, you got rotten teeth?
Like Richard Ramirez?
So, you know, I spoke enough about that documentary. So what did you take away from it? Were you compelled, or did you enjoy it? Do you think it was well done? Was it not well done?
I liked it. I just thought I thought it was a little long. I thought they could have cut that down to about 3 episodes. You know, I really didn't need to hear. They could have cut the first episode out, honestly. Because the first episode was like, okay, here's Mexican guy. He grew up in the streets, and it's like, I don't care.
All right. So you didn't like the background of one of the detectives?
I was fine when they said, okay, he was a beat. They could have narrowed. Salerno was the big cop, the big investigator. Yeah,
Hillside Strangler.
Yeah. He was a big famous cop.
Okay.
And whatever the other guy's name is, you know, Ramirez or whatever. Okay. He was a beat cop that became a detective. There, I just narrowed down an hour into about a minute and a half.
Well, I think what, again, you know, they try to take a documentary like that and make it a feel good thing.
Yeah.
And say, hey, look, local boy makes good. You know, he could have gone the bad way, but, you know, he turned his life around and, you know, he became a policeman and, yeah, you know, Mexicans who live on the street, they're not all bad.
Yeah.
Well, again,
no offense, but I'm watching to see this guy fucking kill people. I'm not watching to see fucking, when you were 13, you robbed a fucking candy store.
Right.
And but you were
turned your life around and you became one of the good guys.
Don't care how you became a cop.
All right.
I mean, dude, I'm going to play the game with you to make my point as valid as I can.
All right, go ahead.
I don't care who the serial killer is. I don't care who it is. Name one cop that busted a serial killer.
Can't tell you.
End of argument.
Yeah, I get it.
Didn't need an hour of it. Did not need an hour of it. You know, I mean, I can't even, the most famous is that guy Moose. Remember Moose that busted the DC sniper?
Who was it? The Rev?
No, the black dude, Moose.
Yeah, I'm being funny.
Wasn't that his name, Chief Moose?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, that's the only name I can even remember.
Well, I think, and I'm trying to give a little bit of credibility to the documentarian who put this Night Stalker video together, is that they were trying to say that this kid from the streets kind of understood the mentality of the Night Stalker because he came from the same place,
right?
You know, and I think that's what the connection was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. You know, they did cover his background fairly
too much,
significantly, when it really didn't have anything, you know, specifically to do with the Night Stalker.
And he was the B cop. They didn't talk dick about the Hillside Strangler cop.
No.
They just didn't. Said he solved the Hillside Strangler.
Yeah, but see, he already established himself as like the top cop, as it were. And this guy came along and he lent something to the investigation. I think that's what they're trying to go for.
I would have been more interested in the Hillside Strangler and what he brought to what he brought from that case to the other case, instead of the Mexican guy telling me that he was so poor that he couldn't eat a fucking bean burrito or whatever he said. And I'm not being racist here, you dicks. That's actually in the documentary.
Yes.
He talked about that he didn't have enough money for fucking anything but burritos. And
sure, of course.
And see, this is the stuff that bothers me. Why do I need to know that he was uncomfortable eating Italian food for the first time in a fucking restaurant?
Because he was out of his element.
Stop it. No one cares. That's a Larry King question.
What was the first time you ate lasagna? Did you know what it was you were eating? Was there ricotta cheese on it?
You solved the case of Richard Ramirez, but what I need to know is, when was the first time you ate a good feta? Was it at the restaurant? Was it when you used to eat burritos? How about that? Then you went to Italian food? See, I watched your doc. Oh, no, that's not what happened, Larry. Something like that. It was something with a burrito and Italian food. Is a burrito Italian? Just asking. I don't know for sure because I didn't prep.
Hey, I don't know if there were a burrito is wrapped in like large noodles or what.
You pour Italian dressing on it. Does that make it Italian? Just asking the question here.
Because I want to learn. I'm curious about the world.
I might want to find a serial killer and I need to know what you eat.
I get that. I really do. It's just funny. I guess they were trying to make some kind of a tie-in why this young street, you know, level cop got to be part of a team that cracked the Richard Ramirez case, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I really don't.
I think they were paid for a 4 or 5 hour documentary.
And they had to fill time.
They had to fill time.
All right. Maybe that was the case.
I think they didn't have enough stuff, so they fucking stretched. Because they stretched with the cop that didn't matter.
True.
They didn't stretch with Salerno. They barely said dick about him. They said he solved the Hillside Strangler, but then there was this young upstart Mexican cop, and we got his whole goddamn history.
Well, the thing is I think what it may have been, and again, I'm stretching here myself.
Yeah.
It's like the young dog maybe taught the old dog some new tricks. Again, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Maybe, but I didn't need to know about his time in Vietnam. I didn't need to know about his beat cop years.
Right.
I didn't need to know about any of it. You had Salerno, who was a famous cop. Then you brought in this fat Mexican guy, and they solved it. That's all I needed to know.
You're just an asshole, man. Why did you have to label him as a fat Mexican?
Look, I'm fat, so I'm allowed to say fat. I acknowledge my fatness, so I'm allowed to call anybody fat. That's how it works, isn't it?
Well, if you got past, you know, the first segment.
Yeah,
that was great. Two through four. Did you enjoy the documentary?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And I didn't know shit about Richard Ramirez. I really didn't. He was one sick fuck, man.
Well, he was, and he wore an AC/DC hat. I remember because, you know, obviously Back in Black was about 5 years old at this time.
Right.
And back then, that was still the hysteria of how evil hard rock and heavy metal was.
Oh, I'm sure.
And, you know, Richard Ramirez had gotten to be known that he was the Night Prowler, you know, Night Stalker, Night Prowler.
Right.
And that he was the AC/DC killer.
Right.
Because, you know, he was known for that AC/DC hat that he wore. And it was like, is AC/DC driving this man to kill people? I remember that part. It was just like, is heavy metal and rock music driving people to kill people?
Yeah.
And they were trying to make some kind of correlation between them, again, the music that they listened to and the actions that they took.
You know, I heard Richard Ramirez wore a hat with AC/DC on it. You know, what kind of hat did you wear when you were looking for him? Did you find a good hat? Did it keep the sun from your eyes? These are important questions. Our listeners or our viewers here on CNN want to know.
Right. So of course, you know, AC/DC was being demonized and villainized as some kind of devil worshipers.
Right. Of course.
And so Richard Ramirez kind of put that, you know, check mark in the people who actually believe that kind of stuff.
Sure.
It's like, see Richard Ramirez, devil worshiper,
yeah,
killing people, listening to AC/DC. Yeah. They've got to be evil.
Back in Black.
Exactly.
I killed her flat.
Well, the highway to hell.
You're on a highway to hell.
Exactly. And the Night Prowler.
Yep.
Night Prowler. He's a Night Stalker, man. He's killing people because he listened to AC/DC.
It's the flick of the switch that made me kill Peter Pan.
Exactly.
He killed somebody named Peter Pan.
Yeah, he killed somebody named Peter Pan up in San Francisco.
Yeah. That's funny.
The Peter Pan murders.
It's not funny, but it is funny.
I mean, it is. It really is kind of bizarre.
Nah.
But yeah, if any of you are old enough or even remember that whole thing, yeah, go check out that documentary. It's the Night Stalker. Is it on? It's on Amazon, right?
Netflix.
Okay, I get the two.
Yeah,
I switch between the two, and I can't remember which one I watch what on. But yeah, it's on Netflix.
It's on one of those communist channels.
Yeah, it's a four-part series, but if you want to watch it, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
Well, another one that I watched that I was really, I hate to use this term, but truly it was, I was very disturbed by.
Okay.
There's a documentary out there, as you're well aware, in most people who pay attention to shit. Mm-hmm. About the murders in Chicago.
The murders in Chicago. What's the documentary called?
I can't remember off the top of my head. It's like where we're at or how we got here or something to that effect. But basically it's a new documentary. It came out in 2020. Okay. And they talk about the murder rate in Chicago.
Okay.
And why it is where it is. So they cover and it's only an hour long. They cover the history of basically public housing in Chicago.
Okay.
And two of the most prominent public housing projects that took place in Chicago are Cabrini Green.
Okay.
And the Robert Taylor projects.
All right.
And they talk about how the federal government, as well as the state and city government, collaborated to build public housing for basically the poor and displaced blacks.
Okay.
Okay. And they show that they spent a lot of money between the feds and the state and the city. They spent a lot of money building these high-rise. They were high-rise apartments is what they were.
Okay.
But the government encouraged women to, if they were going to receive these government subsidies,
mm-hmm.
that the if they were married or they were involved with a man, that the man could not be living in that house or that apartment, rather.
Okay.
In order to receive those subsidies.
All right.
So the fucked up part about this is our government did a lot of bad things back in the 60s, mostly during the Johnson administration.
Okay.
that they encouraged single black women with children mm-hmm. not to have a male presence.
Well, they seem to have taken to that.
They did because money is a very powerful tool for incentivizing people to do certain things.
Right.
As we're well aware, our government, the people who serve in our government,
mm-hmm.
the reason that they're there, they're usually driven by money.
Okay.
So anyway, what happened was that these social programs that sprung up mostly in the 50s, 60s, 70s, subsidized people for, I'm going to use the term poor lifestyle, decisions.
Right.
And one of the things that they chronicle and basically what this was building up to is why are there so many murders in Chicago?
Okay.
And they went from more or less the, you know, 60s, 70s into the 80s, all the way up to present day.
Right.
And they talked about, well, the reasons are is that they being the government, whether it was city, state or federal, herded the quote unquote, the black people, the poor black people
mm-hmm.
into public housing. And they more or less, there was a high concentration of people living in a very, very small area of the city.
Okay.
So one of the things that stood out for me as a stark, what do you want to call what was missing in this documentary
mm-hmm.
is they blamed the government. The government did this. The government didn't do this. They didn't do enough. They didn't, you know, whatever the government didn't do.
Right.
Not once did they ever talk about personal responsibility.
Of course not.
They basically framed the whole situation was, well, there were women with 5 and 6 kids being herded more or less like cattle
mm-hmm.
to live in these apartment complexes or in these buildings.
Right.
They're 5 and 6 kids. And you go, well, the first thing that popped in my mind watching this documentary. It's like, why are you popping out five and six kids when you can't afford it?
Yeah, close your fucking legs, stupid.
Exactly. But not once did they go, well, maybe you should have chose better path for yourself and maybe not got knocked up every, you know, every third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, that's the whole thing. And it's, and they basically said, well, we're just a ward of the state.
Right.
So the state is kind of responsible for our upkeep and where we live and our sustenance and our income. And, you know, there was never any discussion of, well, maybe you should keep your legs closed. Maybe you should. And then they talked about the downturn in the economy and that there were no jobs and this, that, and the other. Well, the other, and this is going to sound, oh man, Neely's being racist again. Well, these people that they talk to about this, these people, and I saw a little discussion in the chat room here before this break.
Yeah.
These people who can't find jobs and can't support themselves, they are so unpresentable as far as like, what do you want to call decent society is concerned?
Sure. Because
who's going to hire somebody with multicolor hair, neck tattoos, multi piercings in their face, speaking illiterately, you know, all this. And they go, well, all we need is jobs. If you would just give us some jobs, we could. It's like, you know what? You've made yourself so undesirable and so unhireable that no decent business would ever give you a job because you're just not job material.
You're supposed to take them for what they are, Neely, not their appearance.
Well, it's not appearance. It's not only appearance, but it's attitude. It's lifestyle choices.
Look, there's nothing. Nothing says responsible like a full face tattoo. Nothing.
Yeah. So anyway, I watched that and I was just like, well, where's the personal responsibility come into this?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come into play?
Yeah.
Because they talked about the criminality of, you know, dealing drugs and, you know, the whole gun violence and, you know, well, we're only trying to scratch out a living. You know, here's Jamal. He's 19 years old and he and his girlfriend have two children and he's just trying to scratch out a living. And it's like, why has Jamal got two children with some chick he's not even married to?
Yeah. And he's 17.
Yeah. It's like, it's, this doesn't ring a bell to you to say, yeah, you kind of fucked your life now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and, but there was a redeeming scenario at the very end of the thing.
Okay.
Again, with the whole programs involved there, I think there was a thing called the Firehouse here in Chicago. I'm not familiar with it personally, but this is where they brought in these young people, maybe in their late teens, maybe in their early 20s. And they kind of taught them basically what they should have learned in high school. You know, basically basic educational type things, GED maybe type things. And they taught them computer skills and various other type of skills and stuff. And then they graduated them just like graduating high school. They had a whole ceremony with the robe and the hat and the tassel, the whole fucking thing, and try to set them on their way to being more prosperous.
Okay.
But herein lies another caveat to this whole thing. They talked about when there was economic downturn and there were jobs being lost and there was no industry to support whatever it is they did. These people would never even consider leaving the area to go seek employment other places.
Right.
You know, they were just like, well, we're just going to stay here and, you know, we're just going to ride it out. It's like, no, you know what? When I was a younger person, you know, when my dad, who was always the sole breadwinner in my family, and we had seven children in my family, wherever the opportunity was, that's where we went.
Right.
So we moved when I was born in Chicago. We moved when I was 2 years old, and we moved to the Pittsburgh area. And then when certain things changed there, we left the Pittsburgh area and we went to the Sharon, Pennsylvania, Youngstown area. And when things changed there, we went to the Akron, Ohio area. Mm-hmm. You know, you go where the opportunity is. You don't just sit there and go, well, you know, something's going to happen. I guess I'll just go on welfare until that happens. Yeah. Sometimes you have to make those changes to mm-hmm. accommodate whatever it is you have to do to make a living.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to do that. I mean, so, you know, it's nice to go, well, my family's here and this is where I live and I, you know, I'm not leaving. It's like, well, sometimes you have to.
Clearly you don't know the struggle, Neely.
Well, I guess I don't, but I've done it. Mm-hmm. I personally have done it, but then again, I never fucked up my life with drugs and alcohol and having, you know, 10 children and banging out several women and all these other things that attribute to the downfall of your existence.
Right.
I've never done that. So again, personal responsibility really plays a large part in how you end up in life. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know that better than anybody. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can always change it. That's the part that always bothers me is when people say, well, I couldn't fix it. And that's bullshit because you can.
You can fix it, but you have to, and I'm going to use a cliche here because I've heard this a lot in the last, mm-hmm. I'm going to say the last decade. Yeah. You have to do the work.
Well, you do. And you have to accept that you start at the fucking bottom.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, dude, after I got smoked, you know, I was dead. And then I fucking 4 years later, I had to start a new career.
Of course you did.
You know, at 30, I guess I would have been 31. I had to start a new career and I started at the bottom. You know, I mean, my first IT job was working over at Eaton Corporation. I was contracting. I wasn't even a full employee. I was contracting for, I think, $11 an hour or something with a wife and kids and everything else.
Yeah, but you did it.
But, and I think I've told this story before. I would work my 40. Then I would get off work on Friday, go home, take a nap, come back and work another 12, working overnight just so I could make 12 more hours of money. Mm-hmm. And 3 days a week, I was working at Domino's delivering pizza. I would get out of work and then I would go home and then, you know, take a quick shower, jump back in the car and go work at Domino's, you know, to make, I don't know, 75 extra dollars a week.
And maybe some tips. Were you a delivery or just?
Yeah, I was doing delivery.
Yeah. So maybe you made a couple bucks in tips too.
Yeah. I mean, that was it. On average, I would bring home $75 between my check and my tips and whatever for 3 days worth of delivery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if I was lucky, I'd catch a crew pie so that I could feed the family one day some pizza. You know, and I mean, you know, I was struggling. I struggled through and I got through it.
Did you deal drugs during that time, Chris?
No, I was out of the drug game at that point.
Did you go out and shoot somebody?
No, I didn't do that.
No, didn't do that?
Nope. Oh,
maybe that was your white privilege that made you not do that.
No, I guess that's what it was I was so privileged. I was so privileged that I was making $400 a week or whatever it was.
Right.
You know, to do a family of five.
Well, what was interesting about this whole Chicago thing is they were talking about the election of Obama mm-hmm. and how he didn't change anything for them.
No, of course not.
It's like, what did you expect? You got to take personal responsibility for yourself.
Gonna get me a free car.
Yeah, of course. I remember when Obama got elected and ONA were still on the air.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how the streets were going to be paved in cold and how people were going to get free houses and, you know, all this other shit, you know, and some people actually believe that. I remember, you know, ONA playing clips on their show of, mm-hmm. you know, the news media going out interviewing people like at Grant Park here in Chicago when they had the thing when Obama got elected. And they were just like, yeah, you know, we're on Easy Street now. I'm going to get a free house and I'm going to get this. because Obama, a dark skinned man, was now in the office and he understood the struggle.
And Obama and, president, nah.
Yeah. And nothing happened.
Nothing, not at all.
Not a goddamn thing happened.
Nope. How'd that work for you?
Yeah. But people were so confident that somehow, some way, they were going to get something for nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But yeah, that documentary I watched, I was just like, well, where's the talk about personal responsibility and, you know, doing what's right and not breaking the law and not banging out a bunch of kids? And, you know, and the thing is they were interviewing, you know, like the mother of some guy who mm-hmm. basically he was a gangbanger.
Right.
Well, of course she had like all the multicolored hair and she had like the tattoos mm-hmm. and she had, you know, the multi piercings and, you know, the gangster clothes. It's right. just like, yeah, well, you set a really good example for your child.
I can't figure out why I can't get a job.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? If you walked into my building, there's no fucking way I'd hire you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not being racist. That's just saying, you know what? You're not presentable.
Yeah. You don't look accountable for your actions.
Not at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is, yeah, I agree. People can do what they want. If you want to live that way, you go right ahead and do that, but don't sit there and blame everyone else because of you aren't being successful
right
in your life. But, you know, and I was thinking about this today, and you've known me for 20 years, at least. If for whatever reason I had to go out and look for a job today, mm-hmm. what do you think the first thing I would do?
Cut your hair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You hit it right on the head. Mm-hmm. If I had to go look for a job starting on Monday, mm-hmm. the first thing I would do is I would go cut my hair.
Yeah, same.
I would have to do that.
Same.
Because I know that's a requirement. Yeah. And I would not have that attitude as, well, you should accept me whatever way that I show up. It's like, no, I realize that that's a requirement.
Yeah.
So that's what I would have to do. I would go to the, you know, to the salon or the barber or whatever and get my hair cut.
Hey, get your hair cut. You go from there to buy a nice new suit.
Exactly.
So it looks like when you walk in, like you actually give a fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that I would have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that. Yeah. I accept that. It's just like, yeah, I get it. That's what's required. So I guess that's what I'll have to do.
Yeah. Dude, believe me, that's one of my biggest fears is having to go back to a job. And the haircut is one of the big reasons why. It took me 10 fucking years to grow it this long. I don't want to cut it.
Exactly.
But I absolutely would. I would shave it down to the fucking scalp again. I would absolutely go almost crew cut with it. And I'd shave the beard off and I would, you know, I'd do what I had to do to get, yeah. you know, put on a tie, put on a fucking stupid monkey suit and go and do the job, you know, put on the uncomfortable shoes. Hopefully they wouldn't look too hard at my social media.
Well, again, that's something I don't have.
Yeah. Yeah. But the classic metal show.
Yeah. Well, I get that part,
but luckily you don't have Wendell into a lot of things. So.
True. I don't.
Yeah. And for me, all my shit, they'd be looking for Charles. So, cause that's my first name is Charles. So they'd be looking, and believe me, I've already got that in my head. If I ever have to go interviewing again, I will not be Chris Aiken.
Right. Of course.
I will be Charles Aiken. You can call me Chuck. What's up? Hey, I'm Chuck.
Yeah. He's just good old Chuck.
Yeah. What's up? Yeah, it's Charles, but everybody calls me Chuck.
Right.
All my friends. And I will be Chuck for the first 6 months.
Yeah. But that's what you have to do. You, unfortunately, regardless of whether you agree with it or not,
mm-hmm.
you have to play the game.
Yeah, of course.
You have to.
Yeah. if you want to get a job, if you want somebody else to hand you money, which is basically what you're doing, you're asking somebody else to give you money, then you got to fucking look the way they want the person that they want to give their money to.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Got to be presentable. Got to, you know, look like you're going to do their business justice.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're going to hire you and invest their time and money in you, you got to look like, I'm worth that gamble.
That's right.
So anyway, watching that documentary about how the murders are so high and, right. You know, again, you know, this current, mayor in Chicago, thank God I don't live in Chicago,
right.
But this current mayor in Chicago, one of her biggest things, of course, pushing the agenda that she's an openly gay woman and somehow that's going to give her the magical powers to make everything better. It just made things worse.
Right.
They had a high murder rate in Chicago in 2020. And that's what she campaigned on as well. She's going to change all that and make it, you know, as a gay woman, you know, as an openly gay woman, I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And not a fucking thing changed. It made it even worse.
Right.
But is she going to be held accountable? No, because she's a liberal Democrat. Does the media ever hold her accountable? You ever see her show up in the news with any kind of, well, Lori Lightfoot today, she blah, 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 and the murder rate is X amount in Chicago. You never hear that because the media got to bury that story because, well, it's one of ours, so we can't report on it honestly.
Right.
You know, now if it was a Republican who was in charge or part, every day it would be beaten. Look at that. Look at the murder rate in Chicago. Look at this fucking Republican. What a fucking asshole this Republican is running the city of Chicago right into the ground. The murder rate is twice the amount it was last year when a Democrat was in charge.
Right.
You know, that would be the news media reporting that.
Right.
But because it's a gay woman, Lori Lightfoot, nothing is ever reported, even though it's twice as bad as it was before.
Of course.
Not a fucking word.
Oh. She's doing the right things, Neil.
Of course.
You're just biased against her.
No, I'm not.
Racist.
That's fact.
Racist. She's an ugly black woman. All the things you're supposed to think is good.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
I didn't realize that Beetlejuice was running for office, but people found you know, him attractive.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, fuck you, Lori Lightfoot, and your whole ilk.
You know what? You're having mental illness, Neely.
I do have mental illness. Sickening. Fucking sickening.
I know.
So if there's a couple of documentaries out there for you to watch, I think for those of you who enjoy that kind of thing, there you go. You got some watching stuff to do.
There you go. Nice.
All right. Well, let's take a break.
And hold on. Before we go to break real quick, I want to do one more quick topic.
All right. Go ahead.
This will be a quick one. In the email, the request mail, I sent you the thing about Kumia.
Yes.
This is the only real political thing I want to do tonight, just because I think you'll find it really funny.
You know, and I didn't listen to this specifically because I wanted to do this on the show.
Yeah. You'll get a kick out of this.
All right.
Here's the premise, and we're not going to get all, and we're just going to tell everybody in the stupid chat room, we're not going to get all overly political, but I want you to hear this. This is Kumia and Dave. They were talking about,
you gotta throw in their personal friend of mine.
My personal friend, Dave Landau.
Exactly. There you go. That's
from Last Comic Standing and, you know, Comedy Central. Yeah,
and the fact that I do his website personally, his website.
You know, my famous friend, Dave.
No, when I was at his show about a week ago, when I broke my foot.
Yeah, when I broke my foot, dealing with the entertainment stylings of David Landau, you know.
He's from Detroit, as you know.
Yeah, he's from Detroit.
Another blighted city.
Yeah, another horrid city.
Yeah.
But they were watching the news.
Okay.
They were watching a news conference with the... whatever this new chick's name is. I don't know what her name is. The redhead chick.
Raggedy Ann.
Yeah. Raggedy Ann. She's not very pretty and needs some makeup in the worst.
Well, of course, there's no Kaylee McInerney
or whatever. She was hot.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
It was hot. This one looks like a frumpy old fucking pig.
No, I was trading text with Sal today.
Okay.
Have you ever known a liberal woman in politics who was actually attractive?
Lori Lightfoot?
Please. I mean, you think about the chicks in the Trump administration or even just Republicans in general.
Right.
Regardless of their age, whether it was a Sarah Palin, who I thought was hot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Kayleigh McInerney.
Tulsi Gabbard.
And, well, no, she's not a Republican.
What is she?
She's like a Dem, I think. I'm pretty sure she's a Dem. But
she's hot?
She's okay.
I like her.
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Okay.
And Tommy Lahren.
Yeah, Tommy Lahren is super hot.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, but then you think about these Dem women, and they're just like all these pink hair, ugly, overweight, nasty looking, stinky, snatch smelling bitches.
Stop.
They're the worst.
Don't tell me you haven't rubbed one or two out to fucking Rachel Levine.
Yeah. Okay. That's a perfect example. All right.
Or Judge Bickford that I showed you earlier, Erica Bickford,
or Rachel Maddow, or Richard Maddow, whatever the fuck her name is.
Hi, I'm Rachel. Here's the news. President Trump sucks. He still sucks.
Well, bottom line, liberal women are not hot.
No, they're really not.
They got hair under their arms. They probably got a full on beaver like jackal likes, and they probably smell.
Yeah. AOC.
I wouldn't fuck her with your dick.
Stop. Really?
No, fuck her.
What about if she had a lobotomy?
No, I
you still wouldn't.
No, she's another one.
If she was stupid and couldn't talk, I would.
I know you would, but your standards are way lower than mine.
That is true, but she's got a pretty rocking bod.
Yeah, gross.
I like her.
Yeah, you would probably like and Omar too, and Talib Rashid.
Well, God knows, I've never seen what's under there to know. Gross. They're always wrapped up in fucking sheets.
Yeah.
You know, AOC's got some nice titties. There's no question about that.
Guess that's all that matters.
Yes, sir. You're damn right it is.
All right. So which clip am I playing here?
Play the longer one first. The one that has a longer name.
The press asks about the masks.
Yeah. Because you're going to, Anthony, just bottom line is somebody. And I was stunned by this because of the way that the media is absolutely lapping Biden's.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, that's a love fest. You know, Biden is just, I don't know if you saw it or not, but when there were, you know, after the inauguration, the lights around the
Capitol or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. They go, those are representative of Joe Biden's arms wrapping his arms around the country.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, my God. The stark contrast between this night and when Trump was in office.
Oh, thank God.
Please.
Now, look at that attractive woman in the chat room. That's an attractive Democrat. Rosa DeLauria.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I loved her when she was in Rush.
only she cut her hair.
Fly by night.
Right.
Too funny.
I don't know. I'm about ready to throw up here. Oh, my God.
Well, you'll like this because Anthony just goes on a rant that might as well have been Neely going on a rant.
I think Anthony needs to be canceled.
Oh, stop.
He needs to be canceled immediately.
I'm sure somebody will call the police on him for this rant and say, Verizon.
Of course.
Turn on.
We need to somehow shut down the Anthony Cumia servers.
Shut down the broadcast.
Exactly, because he's saying stuff that we don't like.
That's right.
He's opposing our viewpoint.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Why weren't President Biden and all members of the Biden family masked at all times on federal lands last night?
All right, so that's Peter Ducey.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name on Fox News?
Beats me. I don't watch it.
That's his son.
Okay. But yeah, there he is. He's asking the question, I was stunned when I heard this question that they actually called Biden out on something.
Well, that was Peter Ducey, because that was, what's the guy's name on Fox News? Ducey.
Dude, I have not watched Fox News in forever.
All right. Ducey. Let's see here. What's his name? Fox News, Ducey, Fox News, Peter Ducey, Steve Ducey, Peter Ducey. Peter Ducey, he is the son of Steve Ducey.
Steve Ducey, okay.
Yeah, he's been hosting Fox and Friends for like 10 years.
Okay.
So he's the son of Steve Ducey. So, of course, he's going to ask these questions because he's just like, yeah, I'm not fucking afraid.
Yeah, well, good for him.
All right, so here we go. So you know his background now. His father is on Fox News. So, you know, he kind of carrying on the tradition of, yeah, I'm going to ask a question here.
All right,
here we go.
Mandates masks on federal lands at all times.
Okay, good question.
At the inaugural
memorial, yes.
I think, Steve, he was celebrating an evening of a historic day in our country. And certainly he signed the mask mandate because it's a way to send a message to the American public about the importance of wearing masks, how it can save tens of thousands of lives. We take a number of COVID precautions, as you know, here in terms of testing, social distancing, mask wearing ourselves as we do every single day.
But he wasn't wearing one.
I don't know that I have more for you on it than that.
Why would that's Joe Biden?
So basically, I have no answer.
Yeah, I have no answer, but it's okay.
Well, you know, as long as it was celebratory, perfectly fine.
Well, Anthony's going to address that.
And, you know, the same way with alcoholic drink at a bar. If you're not eating, COVID will get you.
That's right.
If you're eating, COVID's fine.
Mm-hmm, you're right.
I'll get you.
You're right.
You know, but if you're celebratory and you planned a party, much like that governor of California.
Yeah, Newsom.
Yeah. If you were celebrating a birthday without a mask, perfectly fine because there was a lot of planning involved.
Yeah.
But under other circumstances, the COVID would get you.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Democrat liberal assholes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear what Anthony has to say.
Okay.
And often talks about it is not just important the example of power, but the power of our example. Oh. Was that a good example for people who are watching who might not pay attention?
Just say no, because it isn't.
Well, Steve, I think the power of his example is also the message he sends by signing 25 executive orders, including almost half of them.
This has nothing to do with what he's asking, you cunt.
Requirements that we're all under every single day here to ensure we're sending that message to the public.
Anything she
Yesterday
says.
Was a historic moment in our history. He was inaugurated.
She just spins it into a lie.
He was surrounded
job.
By his family. We take a number of precautions, but I think we have bigger issues to worry about.
We got bigger issues to worry about. Next question. We're not going to address that. Fuck you.
Yeah, we're moving on.
Yeah, we're not. I'm going to give you a non-answer.
Yeah.
Fucking cocksmokers. All right, here we go.
There's just to worry about him not wearing a mask. Remember what
the whole mask the biggest issue?
Is there any more to this?
That's it? Is that it?
I don't know. Just stop playing. I don't know why. It's got to be more to this.
Yeah, there's more to that.
All right, hang on a minute. I'll do this a different way. All right, let's see here.
just spins it into a lie.
States. He was surrounded by his family. We take a number of precautions, but I don't think, we have bigger issues to worry about.
Yeah, bigger issues to worry about him not wearing a mask. Remember what they
said? Isn't the whole mask the biggest issue?
Let me go to Jeff Bonita because I already went to you, if that's okay.
I loved that. I loved that that guy asked a fucking question, and on day one, they had to start that bullshit where they don't answer the fucking question. That's his open and honest and transparent administration. Another lying sack of shit up at that podium, avoiding, evading questions. The motherfucker was at the Lincoln Memorial, federal property, without a fucking mask on because he was celebrating. What about a birthday? What about someone else's fucking celebration? That's not good enough. Just like the asshole Newsom in California, just like asshole Cuomo here, just like asshole de Blasio dancing in Times Square on New Year's Eve. They could do whatever the fuck they want, and you can go fuck yourself. That's what they do. That's their fucking gig, sons of fucks.
I feel his frustration, man. I really do. It's just like, you guys, again, rules for thee, not for me.
Well, all I took away from Biden not wearing a mask is that I don't need to. That's what I'm taking away from
it. Well, you weren't celebrating at the Capitol.
But I'm always celebrating something.
Yeah, but you have to celebrate at the Capitol to get that caveat.
Not the way I see it.
Nope. Got to celebrate at the Capitol. Right. I'm sorry, because it's a big day.
Sorry. Nope. I'm celebrating the fact that I'm still alive. Thank you. No mask for me.
So what was the second clip here?
It's just more of Ant going off, but it's just funny.
All right. Let's listen to it.
Sorry, who?
Dummies. You dummies that voted thinking you were going to get this special magical shit. What a bunch of dummies.
Even if you voted to get $2,000, you're just an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. You also voted for $1,400.
It's just criminal.
And you're not getting it. You voted for $1,400 that you're either not getting, or it's going to be attached to a bill that's going to cost you so much more than $1,400. Like, the tax burden on you for what's going to be in that bill, the Green New Deal, higher gas prices because of the energy bullshit he's going to pull. He's already pulled permits for drilling and shut down the Canadian pipeline. And you thought you were getting $1,400? The college tuition payments that they're going to fucking give people, it's going to cost you so much more than the $1,400 that you're probably not getting anyway. You dummies. You are stupid, stupid motherfuckers.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, he's going to get his servers pulled, and he's going to get his internet access pulled.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's got a different viewpoint.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, eat shit, Anthony. As much as I love you as a broadcaster who's greater than Larry King ever was,
yeah,
you're gonna pay, man. You're gonna pay.
I suggest you keep that shorter clip and make that part of the intro for the next 4 years.
Yeah, you're gonna pay and pay and pay, Anthony.
He really just fucking went crazy. Well,
and I get it, believe me, I do. And he's absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Of course. Yeah, those are just two little clips of, if you really want to watch something, watch his whole thing Wednesday. His Wednesday edition of the show.
All right, I'll have to pull it up.
Because, I mean, he just went off.
I don't blame the guy.
I don't either.
That guy there worked, you know, 25, 30 years in an industry, and you know, God bless him. He made a lot of bank.
Yeah.
You know, due to his hard work, talent, whatever it is you want to call it.
Sure.
And a guy like that is going to be fucked for his success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's getting the fuck out of New York. He's moving in the spring.
Can you blame him?
No, I don't blame him at all.
Did he say where he's going?
South Carolina.
All right. Any reason why?
Better, something about better with the guns and better with the taxes.
All right. Well, fair enough. And, yeah. And you know what the thing is probably smart move.
Yeah. Cause Dave's going with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dave's going too.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. They're taking the fuck off. They're getting out of New York.
Well, again, I can't blame them for that.
Nope.
And that, see, this just goes, this plays right into exactly what I was talking about in, you know, a few minutes ago about you go where the opportunity is.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
sure don't.
So if it's not working out, you need to go.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how it works. It's just like, yeah, we're a transient society and you got to go where the opportunity is.
Mm-hmm.
I know people are partial. Oh, this is my home. This is what I know. This is where I live. I get that. But the thing is sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. Very cool.
So there you go. There's just a quick little taste of the Anthony Cumia show with
love it. Though. Well, someday we might get Anthony on the show.
Dude, I brought it up again.
I know you did. I'm sure you did. What is the big bugaboo? He just doesn't do interviews or what's
it? Ant. It's Ant. Ant gets off of doing the show and he just wants to play video games. He doesn't want to do.
All right. Fair enough. But I would just love that opportunity.
Dude, we'll get it. I Dave has told me this 10 times. He's like, it will happen. He will make it happen. It just hasn't happened.
All right.
And I just don't. And truthfully, I should probably push it a little harder, but I just don't want to be that guy.
I get it. I get it. Trust me. I get it.
You know, I mean,
but I would just like Anthony to know that this show is very much patterned after the, sure. You know, not Larry King, but after what he and, you know, Opie have done.
Sure. Anthony, tell me all about the Anthony Cumia experience. What's it called?
I understand you started this, you know, ad hoc out of your basement, out of your house. Is that true?
How long have you been in the business, Anthony? So you're on the radio, is that correct?
Have microphones changed since I entered the business back in 57?
What setting do you put your microphone on?
Do you use an Electrovoice? Or do you use an Audio Technics?
I've heard that the Radio Shack makes a mean microphone these days. Comment.
The Radio Shack. Oh, my God. That's too funny. All right. Well, I'm going to play a tune here. This song was actually written about Richard Ramirez and the Night Stalker.
Okay.
This song comes from the album known as Back for the Attack.
All right.
And Don said he wrote this song after watching the news coverage of Richard Ramirez and the Night Stalker.
Okay.
So here it is. It's Dokken with Standing in the Shadows exclusively here.
On your classic. All right, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? And you know what else is a lot of fun? The CMS Podcast Network. That's right, cmspn.com is the address. Make sure you go over there. Make sure you watch the episodes there. You listen to the episodes there. And maybe you even just subscribe so it's delivered to your phone, to whatever podcasting software you use. But do it from cmspn.com. Once again, cmspn.com, cmspn.com, cmspn.com. We'll see you next time, fucks.